You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Voney, your host. Nice to have you with us. Many people, even to this day, will argue that technology has not failed us. Technology has only gotten better. It's made our lives better. And in many cases, I suppose that's very true. But there are a lot of ways in which technology either has failed many of us or is not living up to the promises. So who should step in? Who should have some say in that? Many people feel that the large tech companies are not caring or are just turning their backs when negative vibes, as they say, are floating about. So should government step in? And that's where my guest this week, he's British-born author and barrister, Jamie Suskin. His new book is The Digital Republic, Freedom and Democracy in the 21st Century. And I think Jamie, like many of us, feels somewhat frustrated and abandoned in some cases as to why government hasn't stepped up and done a little bit more in keeping tech companies sharp and keeping them on point, as they say. Jamie, nice to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm going to assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you get frustrated, as I do many times, that in spite of this being the year 2022, and technology, been around quite a while now, and for all of its benefits, and there are many, I want to emphasize that, there are many, but in many cases, technology, for one reason or another, has also failed us. So I get the sense that part of the motivation for writing the book is because you too have been frustrated.
Yes, frustrated, concerned. I mean, listen, I love digital technology, and I think that it should be able to make life better, to make life more dignified, more fun, more interesting for human beings. Properly governed, I also believe that digital technology should be good for democracy and should make us more free, should enhance our freedom as well. My concern, though, is that the way things are developing, we're not going to get the best out of technology in society. Instead of powerful systems being developed to improve democracy or to make us more free or to increase the amount of justice in the world, we're getting technologies that are mainly developed for the economic and financial benefit of those who own and control them. And that's understandable in the market economy, but it's not necessarily desirable because sometimes the awesome power of tech needs to be brought to bear for all of us and for all of our shared values, not just for the benefit of those who happen to be marketing it.
Now, see, I agree with you, and I think a vast majority of Americans would agree with that. But let me ask you, and you're right, especially here in America, we're a free enterprise. This is we've been built on free enterprise, that if you can start an organization, if you can start a company, then you're entitled to the profits and the benefits. That's just how it is. It's been like that for centuries. But let me ask you, much like other giant industries, and I'll use oil because right now oil prices are surging worldwide. People are feeling the effects on their pocketbooks. Government always seems to be shy, timid, for lack of another word, Jamie, in reining them in, bringing, for aesthetic purposes, they bring him into Washington and, maybe they go through a day of testimony back and forth and then nothing else happens. Is this because there's a lot of money that goes into political coffers and therefore there's no motivation for government to rein in tech companies?
Well, let me firstly say that it's worth having an international perspective on these things. The truth is that some governments are better than others. Some are more willing than others to take on entrenched interests in society, whether they be oil and gas interests or big tech interests or traditional media interests, whatever it is. And there are a number of reasons why, it is not always straightforward for politicians to intervene in the digital sphere. some of them are not good reasons, and they're the ones that you kind of hinted at. There is an enormous amount of lobbying and money that goes on from the tech industry here in Washington, D.C., where I am today. But there are also slightly more subtle issues as well, because let's say, for instance, that we think that what's happening in social media might be sort of damaging or fraying democracy. We think that overall, the impact that it's having is to lessen the quality of debate in America and make it more polarized and make it more less attuned to the truth. If that's right, then what you're describing is a problem at a kind of social level. The harm that's being caused is to society as a whole. Each individual, each member of society, only has a kind of small stake, a real stake, but a small stake. But what matters is when all of the stakes are added together and you consider the big picture. Problems like that, where no individual can really point to themselves and say, you know, all of my rights have been violated. Problems like that are quite difficult for politicians to get a grip on, because there is no specific constituency for which they are expected to, to work or to respond to. The problem is at a societal level, they haven't got a particular group banging down their door. So it's one of those political problems that's quite kind of diffuse in a way, and that makes it difficult to regulate. Climate change is in a similar kind of category.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with you on that one. Well, Jamie, let me ask you then. Here's a perfect example. There has always been an issue with guns in this country, and this year that seems to be a tremendous increase in shootings across the nation. Many people say that some of these people, these shooters, have found their voice, or have been inspired, or have gotten the wherewithal to act by going on social media. So as you were talking, as you were alluding to earlier, there's a you would think that there would be some conscious effort to curb that. But then again, as you said, this is global, and each government is different. But here in this country, people are very outspoken, Jamie, about free speech and your right to say what you want, whether it's right or wrong. Then you have to make the right decision to say, well, I don't agree with that, but I'm just going to walk away and not bother with it or act on it. So what I'm asking is, and I think, again, correct me if I'm wrong, this might be part and parcel of some of the things that you've considered as well. You're never going to convince, I don't think, tech giants that because they allow some of this vitriolic talk or presence on social media that can, perhaps not you and I, but some people find that as their voice, they find that as their platform, and then they act out in this, this violent way. So what I'm asking is morals/legality, tough combination, right? I mean, you don't want to violate, free speech rights, even though there's a moral, there's a moral component to this. So how do you work that out?
It's a balance that is better struck in Europe than it is in the United States. And that may be difficult to hear for some of your listeners, but the truth is this is more of a problem here in America than it is in other parts of the world. And I think it's important to be honest about that. Social media causes problems of the kinds that you've described in two ways. One is there are these kind of festering pockets online where like-minded people from unpleasant constituencies, whether they are interested in terrorism, interested in mass murder, interested in child pornography, the internet allows them to find each other, right?
Yeah.
And the second thing the internet allows people to do is if you're a nut job who wants to shoot up a school, you know that if you post a video of that somewhere on the internet, it will be seen by millions and millions of people. So it gives you the opportunity to become, in your own kind of warped way, a sort of celebrity for a day. In Europe, you know, let me put it this way. The democracies in Europe are democracies, and they are liberal democracies, and they are free. But a different balance is struck when it comes to free speech in the digital age, because it is recognized that free speech is vitally, vitally important, but it doesn't and shouldn't be absolute. There are limits on what you are allowed permissibly to say in society, and that includes things like child pornography and terrorism and the like. That kind of speech is illegal, and it's illegal online as it is offline. Now, I know the same isn't true in the United States in many respects.
Right.
Although I will say this, you know, people describe the U.S. as a kind of free speech absolutist state. It is and it isn't. Certain kinds of types of speech are already illegal in the United States.
You right.
know, fraud, defamation in some cases,
mm-hmm.
particular forms of incitement to immediate violence. So there is no country in the world that has free speech absolutism. It's just that in the United States, the line is drawn much more permissively than it is in other countries. A final thought on this point. When it comes to free speech, it's not that passing no laws necessarily means you're going to have freer speech in a country. On the contrary, what we currently have is social media platforms drawing the boundaries of free speech so that they decide what is acceptable, what may be said, and who may say it. And they may place limits on it that the rest of us find unacceptable. So just to take one example, for instance, Instagram, the very famous platform,
mm-hmm.
Instagram has a rule against showing female nipples. Like, you can show a male nipple on Instagram, but you can't show a female nipple. And many women, many feminists, and many men find that rule unfair and inconsistent. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. What I'm saying is the decision about free speech there, the philosophical decision, as it were, is being left to Instagram and its lawyers, rather than the kind of social decision by the democratic population. And, you know, I believe that big questions about free speech are ultimately political rather than commercial, and for the platforms themselves to decide.
Right, right. I want to take a quick pause, and we'll be stepping right back. This is 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vohner, host of The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us if you're just joining us. If you've been with us from the outset, you know my guest this week is British-born author and barrister Jamie Susskind. His new book is The Digital Republic, Freedom and Democracy in the 21st Century. Jamie, I think I agree with that 100%, and I think 90% of people across the globe would agree with that 100%. I remember about a year ago, the U.S. Congress called forth executives. In fact, Mark Zuckerberg himself from Facebook was brought into Washington. And you would hope that change would have taken effect after that. I mean, there they are in the national spotlight. Congress, for whatever you can call it, a PR campaign. But they did let him know, and his organization, as well as other tech giants, that there needs to be some change. But now, as I said, almost a year later or thereabouts, nothing seems to have changed. To me, it would seem almost a billion-dollar organization. You're reaping your profits because the way you've established your platforms, the way you're existing business is doing business is a hard thing to change. I'm sure when he goes back, as you said, when he sits down, these executives sits down with their attorneys and their upper management, and they say, you know, Congress wants us to, trim off some of this, or we, you know, we need to narrow our focus here. But that's going to cut into profits, and that's going to mean our market share gets diminished. So where would be, you know, does government, in other words, does government have to be, at least in this country, more heavy-handed to enact any kind of change?
Yes, of course it does. I mean, it's baffling that in a democracy like this, people accept the kind of theater of cross-examining Mark Zuckerberg in a Capitol Hill committee room and confuse that for the business of passing laws. These are very different things, and we shouldn't let anyone off the hook. I mean, frankly, it is. I think Mark Zuckerberg would rather turn up and get shouted at for a few hours than have to actually deal with new laws. And likewise, politicians would like to look tough on the TV for a few hours without actually making any difference.
Right.
I mean, the whole problem I have with the way that the tech industry is currently governed is that it involves government, you know, at least in this country, basically saying please and thank you. And I think that lets people down. You know, the government is there to help ordinary folks in their millions who don't have a voice, don't have a say, aren't able to stand up to enormous corporations. And just telling Mark Zuckerberg he's a naughty boy, I think he's got broad enough shoulders to deal with that. in a real kind of democracy with the rule of law, if you want companies to behave in a certain way, you have to make it a legal imperative and therefore a commercial incentive for them to do so. It's actually wrong to ask Mark Zuckerberg to take steps that go against his fundamental role, which is to deliver shareholder value. I understand why corporations are pursuing what's best for their shareholders. The law's job is to realign those incentives, to create a regulatory environment in which the pursuit of shareholder value is managed and curtailed within a certain set of boundaries. And the law, at least here in the United States, isn't doing that as well as it should.
Now, here's the other thing, Jamie, and I agree with you. I think you're exactly right. There's no way, and maybe even if you and I were in that position, you know, got a $1 billion organization, but you also have a large stake with the shareholders, and they're not going to be happy with you if share prices start to plunder because of changes that you affected within your organization. But here's where I'm seeing a big roadblock, Jamie, and maybe you see it differently. Okay, if government, let's just say the U.S. Congress does decide to play a stronger role, plays hardball a little bit more, and starts to clip the wings, if you will, somewhat on just what type of content can be put out there. My fear, and we're already seeing it with an issue regarding women's reproductive with the Roe versus Wade. It'll go up to the Supreme Court. It'll get tossed around back and forth by the justices, perhaps. Whatever decision they make will probably not be totally in agreement with everybody. In fact, I know it wouldn't be. And we're already seeing public outrage. We're seeing protests across the country just on the Roe versus Wade. So even if Congress got the backbone to do something about curtailing some of this, my fear is that it would be challenged. And you being legally trained, know that this could get tied up for years at taxpayer expense in the courts before any change comes. So I guess my concern here is that I don't see any light in the near tunnel or in the near future that'll affect any kind of a change. Is there something I'm not getting?
No, I mean, you get it perfectly well. And listen, I'm afraid I haven't written a book about how to resolve the political dysfunction of the United States of America. I wish, Al, that I had the answer to that, and maybe I'll try and come up with it for my next book. I think the country is in a terrible place politically,
right.
And not just on this issue, but on a host of issues, it's become very, very difficult to govern. And the only thing I would say is this: I think a lot of the challenges of big tech are challenges which it might be possible with skillful leadership to portray as being neither of the left nor the right, or at least of both. I mean, what I say the fundamental problem is with the tech industry is unaccountable power, that you have power concentrated in one part of society and no recourse for those who are subject to that power when it is exercised in an unacceptable way. That is actually, and the book's called The Digital Republic, that is actually an idea that is not the preserve of the left wing or even the center. That's an old school Republican idea. And you can see perhaps that right and left might find common cause on some of these issues. But look, I certainly don't pretend this is easy. I mean, if you look at what's happening in the European Union, for instance, you know, they're passing all kinds of useful laws relating to digital technology. They're showing that it can be done. It's just that the current political moment in the United States makes it good in almost everything that's been done in politics. All I've tried to do in my book is say, look, to the extent that one roadblock to reform of this tech is a kind of lack of intellectual clarity, a lack of understanding about why we need to act and what we could do, then I'm going to remove that roadblock. But the rest of the roadblocks, I'm afraid, are above my pay grade.
Right. I'm just wondering, Jamie, we've got just a few moments left, but here's another thought, and I want to get your sense on this. As you said, and I agree with you, I think it would take a dynamic leader, one who can bring both sides together so that there's you know, together both parties, all those involved realize what's at stake here, and they see that it's for the common good first and foremost. You're going to have to give something to get something is what I'm getting at. I really believe that, especially in business and in politics, that's how it works. So maybe the administration, whether it's this current administration or a future administration, whatever Congress can work out, says, look, you know, if you're willing to, you know, if you're willing to change some of the models that you have here and how you do business, and I'm talking about specifically you know, the high tech industry, then we can do something in a way of perhaps better tax incentives. And I'm not saying let's give more benefits and more of a free ride to these big companies. But as you said, it's going to take some keen negotiations. And my belief has always been, if you can dangle a carrot or two, you might get some results. Does that sound foolish, or is there some brevity to that?
No, Al doesn't sound foolish. It sounds like you'd be quite a good politician. I mean, I'm pro-tech. I'm all about, you know, creating a business environment that is encouraging for digital technologies to grow.
Right.
And whether that's carrying on the long and sometimes hidden tradition of having the government subsidize and invest in exciting new tech projects, whether it's making a place attractive to work and base yourself in because of its tax system, whether it's having a fantastic infrastructure offering or a fantastically educated population in order to enable an educated workforce. Whatever it is, countries around the world should all be striving, in my view, to be the most hospitable place to do business for digital technology companies. That doesn't mean that the latter should be able to just run rampant, though. And so, yes, the balance has to be struck somewhere. And I think you're right that the more that can be done to sweeten the deal, the better.
Right, right. And you know, Jamie, I think you said it earlier, and I think most people would agree with you wholeheartedly, is that this isn't novel. You know, countries around the globe are dealing with, the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world. He's not just here in the USA. This is a global company. This is a global reach. So everybody has a stake in that. And yet some are doing a better job of at least, taming the wild beast, as they say, better than others. We've got a couple of seconds, a couple moments left, Jamie. But real quickly, if you were before Congress this morning, I know you're down in Washington today, and as you said, you keep a keen eye on this. But at the same token, like many of us, we've all depend on technology today, and it has, in many cases, I don't want to sound like an ogre. It's made benefits to many people's lives. But if you were to give some advice to Congress this morning, and like I said, real quick, what would you tell them?
the big gaping hole in American policy in this area, which makes America unique among all of the advanced democracies of the world, is that it has no federal omnibus data protection law. There is basically no restriction whatsoever on how companies can use your personal data once it has been lawfully gathered. There are some exceptions to that, some contexts, but by and large, that is the position. It is a disaster for the long term of American freedom. It means that people can be profiled and understood and monitored and scrutinized in ways that they could never previously have imagined in the past. So I would get the U.S. Congress to pass a law like that tomorrow if it could, because it would curb a lot of the worst practices along the, across the tech industry, and it would immediately make people safer and more free.
And I know because of your background and the time and effort and the research that you put into writing the book that this is an issue that's front and center with you, and that you know holds a keen interest in your eyes because you see it unfolding globally. But I think most people would agree with you, Jamie, that Congress needs to put this on their to-do list. That we need to take another look at, especially in lieu of what negative. I mean, yes, I've said it many times this evening, and I've said it many times in the past. Technology has certainly made lives easier. It has helped with so many issues, but there's also, as there is with many industries, there's also a downside, and this is one that needs to be addressed because we're seeing it in this country, and you said it yourself. An uptick in violence, and much of that violence, anybody that says otherwise is just fooling themselves, that there is a basis for some of this in social media and what you're allowed to say and do, and what you just alluded to, Jamie, very important, our personal data. I mean, I don't think people realize how much exploitation is going on. But anyway, the book is widely available, The Digital Republic, Freedom and Democracy in the 21st Century. My guest has been British-born author and barrister, and the author of the book, Jamie Suskin. The book is widely available and a real great read. Jamie, real quick, if people want to just pose questions to you directly or get more information, is there a website or are you blogging? Is there a Twitter account? Is there some way people can reach out to you directly?
Yes, I'd love people to reach out to me on my Twitter account, which is at Jamie Suskin. So that's JAMIESUSSKIND. I'm an active tweeter, and I'd be happy to hear from any of your listeners. Al, thank you so much for having me. This is the issue I'm really passionate about, and I don't think it just needs to go on Congress's to-do list. I think this is going to be one of the great political questions of our time as these technologies get more and more powerful.
Yeah,
bite the bullet now.
I couldn't agree with you more, Jamie. I think it is going to be front and center in a shorter time than most people realize, because we're seeing a proliferation in problems, and it can't continue to go on. But again, thank you so much for being our guest this evening. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. I always welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona.